to the coffee table here on KBBI, AM 890 Homer. In the studio today, Susan Houlihan and Robbie Mixon. The topic today, the farmer's market, the food hub, sustainable agriculture in Alaska, growing local food. And my first guest is Robbie Mixon. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also Susan Houlihan.
Good morning. Yeah. Happy to be here.
And Robbie, can you start by giving me an idea of who you are and what you do? Introduce yourself to the people.
Hi, I'm the director of the Homer Farmers Market, starting my seventh season managing the market. And I also coordinate the Kenai Peninsula Food Hub. It's like an online farmers market, and we are in our second season now.
And Susan?
I have been a vendor at the Homer Farmers Market selling Alpenglow skincare since 2001. This is also my second year selling for the Food Hub, and I did some of the organization to get that going. And I've been on the board of directors for the Farmers Market. This is my third three-year term. So I'm a huge fan of our local food entity and the Farmers Market and the Food Hub. So
I want to start with the farmer's market. Does it start this Saturday?
No, we are setting up this Saturday.
Okay, can you tell me about what's going to be going on this Saturday?
We will be getting the site set up. We've already had some great volunteers to help us paint the lot and mark where all their booths are, but this Saturday we'll set up all of the market infrastructure, like our tents and our kids zone, and then vendors can come, find out their space, and get their booth set up ready for next Saturday, the 27th, which is our opening day.
Excellent. That's exciting. I want to backtrack a little, and can you give a short history of the farmers market? Go, Susan.
Well, I believe our first year was 2000. It just started with Sharon Rufa from Two Sisters was highly involved, Paul Castellani, just a small group of people pulling together. We've been at the current lot on Ocean Drive since at least 2001, and it's just grown every year. Since we've had Robbie, our whole infrastructure has changed because she's so good at getting programs organized, managed. We've just expanded so many things. We have a stronger online presence, the systems to run things like the kids' activities, music programs, the chefs at the market, all the programs that are really a community service that we run at the market actually require a fair amount of coordination and organization. Robbie is so good at getting all of that seamless so that throughout the summer the customers just come and the vendors come, and it's just like this finely greased wheel. It's just gotten better every year, in my opinion, in terms of seeing how much more we can do for the community. And also, part of the foundation of the market since the very beginning has been, what type of vendors do we want? As opposed to some farmers market, which allow vendors that sell purchased items, our farmers market has always had a very strict policy where everything we're selling, we're making. And we have a priority system for people that are using local materials. So for instance, in my products, I'm wild crafting and home growing herbs and flowers to include in my skincare products. We have a jeweler, he's actually the board president for the farmers market, who uses some local oyster shells and mussel shells in his jewelry. So we're going to prioritize a jeweler that uses local materials, and that has kept our market incredibly local. And that's one thing that customers love about it.
Robbie, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the economic benefits of local farmers markets and what it brings to the community.
Sure. Around the state, we import over 95% of our food. So anything that we can do locally to feed our communities keeps that money local. So you're not paying a distributor, you're not paying a grocery store, all the things that take a little piece that end up, the farmer ends up with just a fraction of what they should be earning. So with the farmer's market and the food hub, a lot more of the money stays within the community and goes to directly support the farmers who are trying to make a living feeding Alaskans.
Right, you're paying your neighbors.
Exactly.
Not to have things shipped from thousands of miles away sometimes.
Exactly. And with the farmer's market and the food hub both, you get to know your farmer better. You get to know their story. You learn about their farm, why they're doing what they're doing, and you make a really personal connection to your food.
And I want to say right now that we would love to hear from any local farmers, especially who are participating in the food hub or the farmer's market, but not exclusively. The number is 235-7721 or toll-free 1-800-979-5224 if anybody's gardening across the bay or up the road from here. And Susan said just a moment ago that you were the master of organization for programs, Robbie. I would love to hear about some of the programs you have, the chef's program, the kids program, some of the things that are happening at the farmer's market.
I will temper this with, we have a wonderful staff.
How big a staff?
We have four, including myself. We have Katie Countess, who manages our EBT program. So that's a program that allows us to accept food stamp benefits and allow people to use those at the market to purchase fresh food. And I'll go ahead and say we had a community fundraiser this past spring to match those funds. So people on the Quest program can come to the market and we will match their spending up to $20. So if they spend $20, they can really spend $40 there. Some other programs we have, the Chef at the Market program, which is coordinated by our market greeter, Margarita Kondak. We bring in different chefs throughout the season that create awesome recipes with AK-grown products. So you can come get a recipe card and get a tasty treat and learn how to cook something you might not normally know how to cook.
And I saw something on your website about a cookbook.
Yes.
How's it coming?
It's slowly but surely coming along. We need a lot more recipes, so if you want to contribute a recipe by July 1st, we are having a contest. So if you submit a recipe by July 1st, you'll be entered into a drawing to win $100 in market coins.
Market coins. So is that how you administrate the program, where you give double the amount?
That's part of it. With our card reader that allows us to accept food stamp benefits, we are also able to accept credit cards and debit. Customers come to our info booth and they run their credit card and we give them $20 gold coins so they can spend at almost any vendor at the market. And this helps our vendors from having to have card readers themselves and duplicating all those fees. And it's just a service we provide for our vendors.
There's a caller on the line. Margo, are you there?
Yeah, this is Margo with Jack Lofty Oyster Co. How are you?
Thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, I just wanted to say one of the things that I really love about the farmers market is not just that my local community is supporting me, but they're also available. They're having that face time with customers, gives me feedback on, helps me bring a better product to market. It's a dialogue. It's an exchange. It's not just supporting your local farmers. You're helping us not just through money and supporting our families, but also helping us build better products, all of us.
Well, can you tell us a little more about your company and the history of it and your products?
Yeah, we are Jack Luff Bay Oyster Co. We sell oysters at the farmer's market primarily, and a little bit of kelp we're going to be doing this year. We bought our farm 4 years ago, and we bought it from Mike Nakata, another local who was also supportive and sold at the farmer's market for years. So our farm and our oysters have been at that market for at least 7 to 10 years, I think.
You just said kelp. What kind of kelp are you collecting, and where are you allowed to collect it? This must be across the bay.
Yeah, we have permits for kelp that grows on our lines and on our gear. We don't harvest from anything but our lines and our gear. And the one that we're most interested in is dulse. We harvest it, but it's a springtime crop, early spring, so it's good in May. Actually, it was good in April and into early May, and then by then it's done. So we harvested some and dried it, and we're going to be trying through the Cottage Foods Promotion Program to sell it this year at the farmer's market.
Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you to the community for supporting us. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Margo. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, Susan.
I'd like to second what Margo said in terms of, she said she gets the feedback from customers, and I think all of us do as vendors there. But one of the really remarkable things about the farmers market is because you start out as a vendor, your first season needs to be space available as opposed to guaranteeing every weekend you have a spot for a full season. Our farmers market is really helping people establish businesses that truly support their family. You get a situation where you can get your feet wet. It's a low investment of money for a vendor to put out for either weekly booths or for the full season. And you have an opportunity to really expand your product line, be it vegetables or crafts, or if you want to be a food vendor and sell lunch at the farmers market. It's provided an opportunity. Many of the vendors there make their living through the farmers market and then establishing their business beyond. And that is something I think a lot of people don't realize our market has really created for our community.
The bagel shop being the prime example. They got their start at the farmers market. They had a booth for, I believe it was just one season, and they had lines literally 40 to 50 deep before the market even opened. So it was really well received by the community, and now they have a thriving business out East End, and very heartwarming.
The Little Mermaid, the folks that run the Little Mermaid restaurant, used to vend at the farmers market also. I think my business wouldn't be what it is today without the farmers market, and I just love it. I think it's so good for businesses, not just the community and customers. It really supports businesses.
Also, I wanted to ask what it makes a cottage business and the difference, and someone who sells at the farmers market doesn't have to have a DEC kitchen. There's a different set of rules for smaller businesses.
Right, and it also deals with what type of products you're going to sell. So the DEC defines that as safer products, so those that baked goods or jams that have a certain pH level, like the sugar prohibits bacteria growth. So there's a whole list of these things, and the DEC is a great place to start, but you also have to make under $25,000 in sales for you to be exempt from having a DEC kitchen, and you also have all kinds of labeling. We want to keep things really safe, but we also want to have business opportunities for smaller scale producers.
And Susan, I was wondering about Alpenglow. My experience with it is that it's cottonwood balm.
Cottonwood balm. I'm up to my ears in it right now.
And where are you harvesting?
So we finished our annual harvest of cottonwood tree buds, which we harvest along rivers typically, Anchor River, which I live near, and also in gravel beds. The larger cottonwood trees have the nice big buds, but I can't reach those. So we look for windfell. Or the smaller trees where I can reach the tree buds. And the buds are what the leaves are going to come from. And we harvest a whole bunch of buds. It's my family and sometimes my kids' friends come along because the more, the merrier. And we extract those beneficial properties that promote healing. It's an incredible balm that I also make with calendula flowers, which we grow in our high tunnel. I started those seeds in February. Alpenglow products are really special because of the wildcrafted botanicals and our organically grown flowers and herbs that we're extracting, either healing or just the scent, like in our Wild Alaskan Rose soap. The rose petals we harvest actually contribute some of the scent to that soap. So it's really Alaskan, not just in name, but you're getting a local product.
And what kind of procedures and regulations do you have to follow to produce?
So I have to follow labeling guidelines put out by the FDA. as a small business. I can't remember if it's under $1 million, how much I would need to earn to have a facility inspected. I don't need to have that, but I do need to follow labeling guidelines, you know.
The number to call if you will have a question or a comment is 235-7721 or toll-free 1-800-979-5224. We are going to get to the food hub soon, but I'd like to introduce Jenny Medley from Blood, Sweat, and Food Farms. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome. It's always exciting to come into the studio.
Well, introduce yourself a bit. Blood, Sweat, and Food Farms.
We're fairly new. We started about 3 years ago. We're an employee-owned LLC, so altogether there are about five of us who are working together to make this farm happen. And our goal is to refine lifestyles. We're trying to make sure that the way we're spending our time every day is valuable to us and that we're creating a valuable product out of that. We started very small, just with a small aquaponics greenhouse, which gave us the opportunity to grow food year-round.
And can you elaborate a little bit on what aquaponics is?
Yeah, aquaponics uses fish to create the nutrients that your plants need. So we basically have a large fish tank, and then the water gets pumped from the fish tank through a series of grow beds. And it also goes through a number of filters. I'll try not to get into too many details.
That's all right. We've got time.
The water is basically processed by microbes that then make the nutrients, basically the fish waste, available to the plants. And the plants help scrub those nutrients from the water so that the fish still have clean water. So it gives us a chance to grow plants without using synthetic fertilizers, which you need to use in a lot of hydroponic systems, that systems where your plants grow in water but without the fish. The fish is what makes it aquaponics.
The fish you're not selling, but
no.
you do have animal products.
We do. So kind of taking the idea of using a waste product as a benefit, we got into more and more animals because we also grow from a high tunnel and we have outdoor crops as well. And we want to produce sustainably grown products without a lot of fertilizer. So you need compost. Well, an important component of compost is animal waste. We actually got into animals so that we would have their manure. The animals that we started with were pigs, chickens, geese. I actually got a list here so I didn't forget anybody. rabbits.
You don't want to make the geese angry.
We've got about 50 of them right now.
Wow. Where are you?
So we're located about a couple miles out East End Road. Our goals are ambitious, but we've been really excited with the animals and the plants we've been able to grow so far, and also the support we've received from the community. We do sell on the food hub as well as at the farmers market, direct to customers, and also to restaurants. So with aquaponics, we started selling to restaurants on the small scale, and then each year as we grow, we're able to make our stuff available to more of the community.
Thanks for checking in. I really appreciate it. But can you stick around for a little while?
Sure.
I've heard Susan and Jenny briefly mention High Tunnel. Would love to hear from High Tunnel Gardeners because I have a few questions about the grant system and how it's shaking out. It is time to take a short break. And who better to sing you through it than Guy Clark? Here comes Homegrown Tomatoes.
A love song. A tender ballad. Well, there ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a rifle, hey, don't get a heart. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging. Every time I go out and dig me a bit. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Gravy, eat them with beans, pinto, or the side. Put them in the middle, but a homegrown tomato on a hot cake. Homegrown tomato, homegrown tomato. What'd life be without homegrown tomato? Only two things that money can't buy. Cemetery out in the garden would be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes?
Thank you, Guy Clark. You are tuned to KBBI AM 890 Homer, and this is The Coffee Table. Guests are Jenny Medley from Blood, Sweat, and Food Farms, Susan Houlihan from Alpenglow Skincare, and Robbie Mixon, the director for the Farmers Market, also the Kenai Peninsula Food Hub for this area. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, let's get right into the food hub. What is it? And this is relatively new, right?
Right. So we are just in our second year of operating the food hub, but food hubs exist all over the country. It's sort of a growing trend with so many people liking to shop online and not deal with crowds and know that they're going to get what they want, so they order it ahead of time, so it's reserved. So we started last year. We have pickup locations in Seldovia, Soldotna, and in Homer. So people, farmers list what they have for sale each week, and then there's an ordering cycle, say Friday through Monday, where people can go on and reserve products that they want, and then they come and pick it up at a central location. So in Homer, this year it's at the Alaska's Wild Emporium. It's the old Alaska Wildberry building.
Right on Pioneer Avenue, right across from City Hall and the College.
Right, yep. So we're in their back warehouse there. So.
And that's going on right this minute, isn't it? Aren't you guys?
We're going there. Jenny and I are heading there next. So we open around 11:15. So, and people are more than welcome to come in and stop and see what's going on, see what products are for sale, ask questions, kind of get a lay of the land. Yeah.
What's the area?
We have products all the way through Soldotna. So those farmers in Soldotna primarily sell in Soldotna. So the project I want to mention is sponsored by Cook and Lake Keeper. So we received a USDA local foods promotion grant in 2015 that is subsidizing the program right now. So another thing that Cook and Lake Keeper has done this year, they are providing transportation of Homer products to the Soldotna Food Hub so we can kind of help supplement what they have going on there, especially in this early season when there's not a lot of products coming out of Soldotna. I know they're still ramping up there. And
so far, it is a summer program, or is it year-round now?
This year, we opened up the 1st of April, and last year, we went all the way through Thanksgiving. So beyond that, it's pretty deep freeze. There's not enough to make it financially viable to continue through the winter, at least right now.
As a Food Hub customer, not just a vendor, it's super easy to get online, order what you want. You see how many of these six packs of starts are available right now. There's greens available, scallions, all sorts of yummies, as well as not only my products. Blood, Sweat, and Food has a lot of animal products, eggs, etc. And you just order online and you just go and pick it up. It's a super seamless, easy to order system. If you're looking for sort of the opposite of the farmer's market, which most people that come on Saturdays don't come in and out in 15 minutes. Because it's such, we have so many different programs, when people come to the market, they end up, you always bump into people you know, and you end up staying, and it's, you know, part of your Saturday for sure. And the Food Hub is to cater to a sort of different clientele.
And I do want to get back to the farmer's market at some point, because there is a whole culture going on while you're there. But in terms of the Food Hub, what's the address where someone could go?
You can go to kenaifoodhub.org. There's contact information there. There's even a cool little animated video to show you how it works. And then you can email info@kenaifoodhub.org.
And how long have you been at it at the Food Hub, Jenny?
We started, I think, with the Food Hub. Mm-hmm. So when the Food Hub started up last year, we were one of the first vendors there.
And what's your experience been?
We've really enjoyed it. I think it's a good way to reach customers who aren't necessarily part of the farmers market crowd. And we're selling meat. So one of the limitations for the farmers market with meat is having the cooler, the refrigeration, everything that you need.
Well, you must have to follow a lot of regulations.
Because we're a smaller producer, for things like poultry, there's an exemption. So we don't have to go to an inspected facility to process poultry. So, and there's different regulations for the different kinds of animals.
But are you subject to inspection?
Because we're producing fewer than 1,000 birds a year, we are not. But everything we sell has to be labeled that we are not inspected, that we're operating under a, I believe, federal exemption. So we're definitely following those, and we're making sure that we're selling a sound product, which is part of the exemption. That works in everybody's favor. Of course, we want to sell the very best product that we can.
Well, I definitely want to hear about how you do quality control, all of you. I mean, at the market, where do you get your feedback? I suppose you get it directly from your customers, but is there a more formal way?
Well, at the Food Hub, as products come in, we are aggregating them with the producer. So Jenny comes in, we go through down the line at everyone's order. We place the product in the section where the customer will pick up, and we're inspecting it as they do it. So if there's some really rough, piddly-looking greens, we're not going to accept those because we only want to sell high quality products here. We also, you know, from time to time we'll get some feedback from customers who've ordered, and we work with the producer and the customer to come up with a good solution. That doesn't happen very often because we have some really great producers who take their job seriously and want happy customers.
One of the advantages with the Food Hub is the orders are placed over the weekends, like 2 days before the drop-off period. So I know exactly how many chickens, how many chicken feet, how many bags of necks I need to bring to the Food Hub. You know, how many bags of French sorrel I need to harvest. So I can time it so that that product that I'm delivering is right out of the freezer or right out of the high tunnel.
So 2 days is enough to keep it fresh, but also like short enough to keep it fresh, but long enough so that you can have time to prepare?
Yes.
And the only other thing I wanted to ask about the Food Hub, although we're taking questions and comments, 235-7721, is you two will be going there, Robbie and Jenny, you'll be going there after you're off air today. What is happening? Are you assembling boxes for people and assembling orders?
Yeah, it's our pickup day. So the first few hours, we have the producers drop off items. So we'll aggregate them. We'll get everything that's going to Soldotna packed in the van and headed up. And then from 3:30 to 6:30, that's when customers will come and pick up their items.
Earlier, both Jenny and Susan referenced high tunnels. So I want to talk a little bit about high tunnel gardening. But if there is anyone out there within the sound of our voice who can add to this conversation, we found out during the break that there is a gap of understanding in terms of the current rules and the current funding. Susan, you wanted to talk specifically about how just having the high tunnel, not even generating products for sale, has enriched your family. Can you start with that?
Well, we've had a high tunnel. This is our sixth or seventh year. We started with the program, and it's completely changed our lives. I love what Jenny said about how one of the main goals of your business is to, I don't know what you said, make your life like what you want it. And that's a goal for me. It's all about not letting my business control me, but me controlling my business and prioritizing, making sure that I'm doing what I want to do. And by growing so much food, by having chickens so that we can use the manure on the high tunnel where we also grow herbs and flowers, it's incredible what a high tunnel produces. And because of that, we do a huge amount of canning and freezing and preparing a food to eat year round. I still have some soup from last summer, you know, that I made in September. But it's just a whole food security that you don't get from a small garden. It is a big.
How big?
Energy. Ours is 20 by 60 feet, plus we have a 20 by 60 potato field, and then we have outside gardens as well for some perennial herbs and flowers and annuals. But high tunnel is very efficient of your time. If you make systems, you put in irrigation, you put fans that are either on timers or go off when it gets a certain temperature in there, you put weed mat in so you're not spending all your time weeding. We've dialed our high tunnel so that basically the majority of my time, if I look at it from when we start planting in May through October, is harvesting. And that is like as efficient as you can get. You know, if I'm mostly dealing with food rather than weeds, I'd much rather be doing that. The whole being able to grow that much food through a high tunnel, things like we do a whole bunch, right now is 75 corn plants, 50 tomatoes, that outside.
This is all for your family's consumption?
Yeah. For our family. And we donate to the food pantry, and we have a couple elderly neighbors that we share with. Sometimes we get some people helping a little bit, you know, in there with just the harvesting. It's so big. There's so much food. Harvesting takes a while, you know. Having a high tunnel is such a wonderful thing in terms of the variety of products you can grow that you can't grow without it or a greenhouse, and they're a lot less expensive than a greenhouse.
What's the difference?
Well, because of the funding, which our high tunnel...
Yeah, can I back up a little bit? Where's that funding coming from?
The NRCS gives a certain amount of money per square foot. And for our particular high tunnel, we ended up spending about double. So the NRCS gave us, since it was a while ago, I don't remember what it cost, but we had to spend an equal amount of our own money because we wanted a very secure high tunnel for wind because we're up at a higher elevation. And we had to put money into dirt work because you want to have a really level area. if you're into gardening and you want to have tomatoes and corn and some plants that just won't grow outside, even if you're not interested in becoming a vendor, I mean, the basil, oh my gosh, the basil in the high tunnel, you just don't see on your deck. You know, it's incredible.
And Robbie, you've got that acronym for me, NRCS, was it?
It's the Natural Resource Conservation Service. So it's an agency of the USDA, the Division of Ag, and they work, I believe, with soil and water conservation districts.
And Jenny, can you talk a little bit about your experience with the high tunnels?
Yeah, we put up our high tunnel about 3 years ago, started growing greens in it right away. And it's amazing how early you can harvest. Like, they're designed to extend the harvest season, and they're very effective in that.
How well do they extend it for this area?
I was able to sell greens. So last year we did have a bit of an earlier, warmer spring, but we had greens to sell at the end of March. So that's quite a bit, because ground outside of a high tunnel, usually you can't even work until the early May or mid-May. We were also harvesting tomatoes last year through early September, and we continued to have greens until the light cut back in October.
And I was hearing from discussion that some of that funding is now being redirected, but it hasn't gone away completely.
Yeah, I wish Kyra was here to give us more in-depth information, but from my understanding, I believe that a lot of the funding this year has been redirected to a different project in the state, and I don't think that means it's dried up. Maybe it's just a little smaller, or a lot smaller than it has been. And
because people are getting high tunnels this year through the program. And one of the really neat things is that now this year is the first year the farmers market will be having Wednesday markets starting at the beginning of the season. So typically we don't have Wednesday markets until July, but because of the high tunnels and early produce, it's amazing. We have vegetables to sell, you know, at the end of May. And so whatever that is, May 31st or June 1st in there, we will have our first Wednesday market. And Wednesday markets, which run from 2 to 5, will go throughout the entire season for the first year this year.
And there is a caller on the line. Laurie, do you read me?
Yes, I do. Hello.
Go ahead, Laurie.
Well, I'm just a proud owner of high tunnels. I have two 30 by 72s, and I just am so excited that we're also going to put two more up this season.
Oh, wonderful. So what comes out of your high tunnel?
I do a lot of mixed greens. And I also plant tomatoes and cucumbers and some things that you can only grow real successful in tunnels. I also grow early garlic. I started the Alaska Garlic Project, and my family, we concentrate on our business called Synergy Gardens, and I work with the farmers market and the NRCS. But in listening to your discussion, how I understand the tunnel funding, that it's part of a national farm bill. And that farm bill may be passed for 4 years or 8 years. I'm not sure about that. So that funding was allocated for a four-year-long process. And so it's up to each state how many high tunnels are applied. And so that funding was secure up until when the farm bill gets renewed.
Oh, thank you for adding that. I appreciate it. So you said you were part of the Garlic Project. Is that a commercial growing initiative for garlic?
Well, it's here in Alaska, people who want to grow garlic, they were ordering their seed in Lower 48, and so I did a lot of research, and I wanted to grow seed garlic for other growers in Alaska. And I've been trialing different varieties for the last 4 years and offering small quantities of my highest quality garlic for seed. And this year, I think I'll have close to 200 pounds or more of garlic seed to offer to Alaskan growers.
Oh, wonderful. And that leads me to another question. Are they swapping seeds at the farmers market?
It's unofficial, but a lot of people do. There might be some vendors who also sell seed. But there is a seed swap that's organized. I'm not sure if it's through the Homer Garden Club, but, you know, that's what gardeners have done for years. is swapping seeds. And through the farmers market, we have our annual meeting the end of January. A lot of times people start talking and they're excited about getting their seeds started. And there's, like I said, a lot of unofficial seed swapping.
Go ahead, Robbie.
We also hosted the farmers market and Sustainable Homer with Kyra Wagner. We hosted a seed swap this past, I believe it was February. So that's something we're looking to keep doing every year, and hopefully it grows.
And a major advantage of using local seeds like garlic or, you know, seeds that you're actually planting that have grown here is that they're acclimatized to this area. I've spent many years buying garlic from outside, and it's a little bit hit or miss. And I've bought garlic from Synergy Garlics, Synergy Gardens, to plant for the last 2 years, and I've had the best garlic crop ever because she's honed her garlic for this environment. And I'm not paying
shipping
on it. And it's just, it's an awesome product. It's not, there's no gasoline involved in its transportation. So that's the case with any of the produce or the crafts you're buying at the market. You're just keeping that money local, and you're not supporting the greater infrastructure of transportation and fuel consumption.
There's a lot less waste of money.
Exactly.
Thanks for calling, Lori. So another thing that I've been hearing from Jenny and Susan and Robbie Mixon is that there is a loop, and you can close that loop by adding animals to your farm. How is that better?
Permaculture.
Well, explain what you mean.
It's permaculture is a whole system of reducing energy that's wasted. It's putting, using, building, designing your gardening system, your home, your energy coming in, your energy going out, so that you're using less of it and just making a more sustainable system. By having chickens, and not only are you eating those eggs, if you're using that manure for your high tunnel, you're reducing fertilizer consumption, not only of organic fertilizers that you would be buying, which would be transported up on a truck or a barge, but you're just keeping everything within your home, farm, garden. It's just a tighter, more efficient use of resources.
I'd say there's significant, like fertilizers rely heavily on fossil fuel industry just for the processing, and so we're eliminating that as well as growing a product that lots of people can really enjoy, because there's not a lot of local meat resources in Alaska. From what I've seen, we've definitely love our fisheries and things like that, but as far as, you know, the farm-to-table beef and pork and chicken, things like that, aside from people who grow their own for their table, there hasn't been a lot of availability to that end.
And also, how are you controlling, let's say, output by what you put into the animals?
So you mentioned weeding in your high tunnel and having your own chickens. And one of my favorite things is to go through and do our weeding and use that as part of our animal feed. We're growing all of our animals on pasture as well. So they're making use of the plants that are growing right there on the farm. And then their output, their waste, is there on the farm. And that's available for us to use. But knowing that we don't want too much buildup of our own, we're creating compost that we can sell and make available to other farmers in the area who are growing crops and then sending them out. Because you've got to be able to fill in that part of the process. If you're always shipping your crops out, those nutrients do get lost. So we're hoping to share the love.
Now, Robbie, I want to get to the Alaska Farmers Market Conference that you hosted last March. But before we do, hey, Kyra's on the line.
Woo! Yay!
Kyra, are you there?
I am here. I'm out working on trails, or I'd be in there talking with you guys, because this is absolutely my favorite topic. I have a wonderful job where I get to work with all of these people that are have discovered the beauty of high tunnels in our area, and I just am thoroughly excited about how many people are now producing their own food, as well as being able to sell it at our farmers market. It's extending our season. We've been monitoring it for years, and we are getting a lot more production a lot earlier and a lot more variety a lot later. So totally excited about that. And then working with Robbie and getting to see all the farmers markets from around the state, like you just mentioned at that conference this March, that was incredible. It was kind of ego boosting because our market rocks. And so, you know, to compare it to somebody in Petersburg where they have one producer who sails in on a boat and they hope that they can make it due to weather, compared to ours where we have dozens of vendors over the summer that come in and provide local food for our community, it's just awesome.
And your experience with Soil and Water Conservation District, are you involved in helping people get their soil right for growing?
Absolutely. So one of the biggest worries, and I hear this sometimes, rather common worry is that people would be over-fertilizing because then it can leach out into your water systems and you end up with as much pollution as there is in the lower 48. So we definitely don't want too much fertilizer. We have pretty good soils here. They just need to be adjusted. So we encourage people to bring their soils into us. We can have them sent off. There's no lab in Alaska, but we have them taken care of, and then our guys will give nutrient recommendations. So translate that chemistry that you get back from the lab, tell you what that really means as far as what you should put in your soil, what you can do if you have perennial crops like trees versus if you have annual crops like vegetables.
And how and where would someone access you and that information for getting their soil analyzed?
If you want to just do it on your own, it's Brookside Labs is where we send it to. You just get the chemistry. It's a little cheaper if you do it that way. You could find them online. If you do it through us, though, you can just drop it off at the Blue Bank building and we'll take care of everything. That blue tile building on the corner of Lake Street and Pioneer is where the Homer Soil and Water and the NRCS office is housed.
And if you could stay on the line a minute, I want to go to Robbie Mixon about the Farmers Market Conference. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah. So in 2015, the Homer Farmers Market received a USDA grant, a Farmers Market Promotion Program grant. And part of that was to develop a statewide Farmers Market Conference. So this past March, we hosted the first ever gathering of Farmers Market managers and organizers from around the state, and we had almost half of the state's markets represented, and we also had a variety of guests. So Arthur Keyes, who is the head of the Alaska Division of Ag, we had Amy Pettit, who runs the Farmland Trust, as well as some other people that helped with insurance information, all kinds of, it ran the gamut of topics. We also had a couple of special guests from the Washington State Farmers Market Association as well as the Minnesota State one. So the culmination of this event, we all decided to revitalize this Alaska State Association that was started about 7 or 8 years ago, but didn't have much steam or funding behind it, so that's our next sort of looking forward to try and keep everyone connected and sharing information and helping each other to create a stronger local food system.
And you think this will become a yearly conference now? When you say revitalize?
Probably by every other year. It's quite a big undertaking, and we had a really strong volunteer committee, so it was mostly run off of volunteer hours with funding from this grant to pay for facilities and travel for all of these participants.
Well, it is that time for final comments. Thank you, Kyra, for calling in. I appreciate
it. You bet.
It.
Thanks for hosting this.
Have a beautiful day out on the trail.
Thanks.
Jenny Medley from Blood, Sweat, and Food. Susan Houlihan from Alpenglow. Robbie Mixon representing the Homer Farmers Market and the Food Hub. Is there anything else that you want to leave people with? Go,
see
Susan.
You next Saturday.
Oh, that's right. So this Saturday, setting up. Mm-hmm. Next Saturday, market is open. Does Blood, Sweat, and Food participate in the market?
We are one of the temporary users that Susan referenced earlier. We have space available. We'll show up, get you some chickens.
And Robbie, there was one other thing before we're done. Do you guys, in terms of like food that is unsold, do you have a relationship with the food pantry?
We do. The food pantry has a collection vessel at the farmers market. So a lot of customers will buy extra. And then if farmers have stuff left over they just don't want to deal with anymore, they'll throw it in the collection area too. So, and that's on Saturdays.
Thanks to everyone who called in. Thank you to Robbie Mixon, Susan Houlihan, and Jenny Medley. You have been listening to The Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer and KBBI.org. I'm your host, Kathleen Gustafson.